Hi. Thanks for being present today for our webcast on the mandate for a 21st century network design. Our lead presenter is Jim Metzler, who is co-founder of the WebTorial's Editorial Analyst Division. So my name is Steve Taylor, and I'm going to be the moderator today. I mentioned that Jim is going to be joining us, and we also have with us Berna Devram from Cisco, who is a senior manager for access switching. Jim, let me just hand everything directly over to you.
Thanks so much, Steve. And yes, the title of today's presentation, The Mandate for 21st Century Network Design, and given that that's the focus, let me just briefly discuss a few goals and a key non-goal. Steve, I really want to spend a little time describing the traditional approach to LAN design, but then layer on top of that the myriad factors that are driving the need for IT organizations to take a different approach to LAN design. And I want to focus on two tightly related concepts, green IT and collaboration. And through the presentation and discussion, Steve, I'll point out why I see those two as being so tightly related. There's also a very clear non-goal. Again, we're going to focus on the drivers of change. We're not going to get down and discuss specific network designs. So if you look at the next slide, you know, it's so curious. Today we think of LANs, we think switched Ethernet, period, full stop. It wasn't that long ago, actually in the early to mid-90s, when the vast majority of LANs were based on shared media, and we had a whole bunch of different techniques. Certainly there was Ethernet, but token ring was very, very common. We used FDDI typically to interconnect our Ethernet LANs. If you believe the industry pundits at the time, that ATM 25 was going to be the dominant LAN technology very soon. And there were other technologies, such as 100 VGNE LAN, that were saying, no, we'll be the dominant technology. Around the early to mid-90s, we first saw the development of a LAN switch. And we're really hungry to understand how to go from this kind of shared design, again, maybe Ethernet to the desktop, FDDI in the backbone, how we deploy LAN switches, and that's, Steve, when we first developed the concepts of access, distribution, and core. But the bottom line was at that time, as remained for most of the last decade, the key design principles for LAN was speed, speed, speed. We've seen that. Whether it's 10 meg, 100 gig, 10 gig, speed has been the dominant design factor for LANs. As we see on the next slide, there are a whole bunch of factors that are driving change. And I want to be very clear with this. Speed is still a very key issue relative to local area networks. So I'm not standing here saying, oh, well, speed used to be important. Now because of these factors, speed is not important. That's not the case. But I do want to discuss factors here that are driving additional requirements for the LAN on top of just blazing speed. I'll spend a few minutes on the factors on this page. Any one of these factors is worthy of discussion unto itself. For example, the first one we see is security. Steve, one of the key points of entry into an organization is that local area network. And it used to be you could assume, and I've talked to so many IT groups that said to me, Jim, I used to be able to assume that if someone was on my LAN, they were, quote, a good guy, close quote. Now with so many situations where you've got temporary workers, one of my favorite examples is a hospital I was working with recently. They said, Jim, we've got visitors, we've got doctors, we've got nurses, we've got students, we have all kinds of people who need different access. We need to deploy some kind of secure LAN access, not to keep everybody out, but to make sure people have access only to the information they're entitled to. If you think of industry and government regulations, well, we talk so much about Sarbanes-Oxley and HIPAA and PCI and those kinds of things. They're all important. The reality is there have been thousands of industry and government regulations over the last 5 or 10 years, and I don't see that trend in anywhere abating. And so many of these regulations come back to issues such as higher security, such as the requirement for business continuity and disaster recovery. You begin to see, Steve, the impact of these requirements on the network.
And wireless. You know, Jim, it's interesting to point out here, since for WebTorials we do have an in- an international audience that most of the ones you mentioned are just the U.S.-based regulations. So take that and make it by end times for worldwide organizations.
Well, yes. I mean, obviously, many of the organizations are worldwide that have a U.S. presence, a presence in Europe, the PAC Rim, et cetera. And so they're governed by, you know, regulations around the world, sometimes similar, sometimes disparate, and it just places incredible pressure on the IT function in general and the network in particular to show that you can comply with those, again, myriad regulations. But if you think about new technology like wireless LANs, you know, the first wireless LAN, Steve, primarily deployed in homes. A lot of organizations were somewhat suspicious of it. Some of the firms I talked to, Jim, it's kind of a toy. We have our wired LAN infrastructure. That's changed. And now I see broad deployment of wireless LANs in enterprise IT organizations. And we have new issues in terms of roaming from one access point to another and deploying services such as voice over a wireless LAN. And Steve, getting back to it, a wireless LAN is still basically a shared media. So there's some very interesting challenges now in the local area network to support an application such as voice over a wireless LAN. Now, my favorite topic, and Steve, I know you know this, is the whole movement towards network and application optimization. And that very often means some kind of an appliance in a branch office. And more that's being integrated into the router for a variety of reasons, certainly energy, green concerns are one, ease of management, cost, et cetera. So we're seeing a variety of optimization devices being deployed to branch offices and being, in many cases, more tightly integrated into the network architecture. New application architecture, Steve, I think is an incredibly important topic. SOA, service-oriented architecture, and that train has left the station a year and a half ago. I'm not saying it's the dominant application architecture today, but it's caught on in the vast majority of IT shops and will continue to catch on. But so has Web 2.0 and rich Internet applications, fundamentally changing how we do application development, in many cases further distributing applications, which creates problems, and in many cases driving dynamic, rich, multimedia type of applications, which again further stresses the network. When I think of IP storage, you know, it wasn't that long ago that the vast, vast majority of storage was in isolated little islands of storage. That's become incredibly expensive and just an abhorrent kind of approach to most IT shops. So we're now moving, we have been for the last couple of years, from islands of storage more to a storage area network. And at the same time, one of the last bastions of technology, Fibre Channel, which is, again, kind of out of the mainstream other than for storage, is transitioning to, you know, an IP type of network. So we're seeing more technology shifts to, again, an IP network. So those are some of the factors, but I really want to spend most of the time talking about, as I say, two tightly related factors, those being green IT and collaboration. And I'm going to start first with green IT. And you know, everybody has their own definition, Steve, and I don't like to read bullets with the audience, but I do want to read this first bullet, and I think it's particularly important relative to a survey that you and I gave recently and some of the responses we got to that survey. So when I think of green IT, I think that as a minimum, it refers to conserving energy, using computing resources efficiently, and that's both efficiently today and efficiently over time, certainly reducing carbon emissions. And the world's changed, Steve. We hear this phrase carbon footprint now so often. We didn't used to. And I think that's really a sign of kind of a social change that's gone on. And I also think when I use the phrase green IT, it also refers to the appropriate handling of hazardous waste. Now, again, not everybody has that same definition, but to me that's what I mean by green IT. And it's driven by a whole bunch of reasons, some of which are quite selfish, the desire to reduce cost. Some of which are getting back to the idea of carbon footprint and the growing consciousness that that's badness and the desire to be a good corporate citizen. Now, I have to admit that 2-3 years ago when I first heard the phrase green IT, I'm thinking some fluffy kind of ill-defined concept. I didn't spend a whole lot of attention on it. I spend more attention on it these days, and there are a whole variety of examples of how people can implement green IT. I've got a few here, one of which is, of course, to integrate multiple network elements into a single device, a single branch office router. By the way, there are other advantages of that relative to manageability and cost, but certainly that it is also has a green IT impact. I think new network designs that reduce the number of devices and are geared around energy efficiency. And Steve, believe me, back in 95, 98, when we were first struggling with, you know, switch design, we were not designing networks based on energy efficiency. That's becoming increasingly important, and that survey result that I referred to, we'll talk about in a few minutes, really reflects that. I do want to talk about this last bullet, though, and make it a little bit less abstract. About 2 weeks ago, I had to fly to Atlanta for a one-hour meeting. Now, I spent about 2 hours in the air, an hour there and an hour back, about another 3 or 4 hours driving to the airport, waiting in line, getting there, getting a rental car, driving to the place, and then repeating that. For that one-hour meeting, I had about 6 hours of overhead. I was able to get a little bit of work done on the plane, but I wasted about 4 or 5 hours of my day for that one-hour meeting. That doesn't count the $400 for the airfare and the $75 for the rental car. So looking at myself as a one-person company, it's very clear to me I need to be able to, if you will, adopt green IT and collaboration and move away from some of this really silly travel. Now, if we move to the next slide on the drivers of collaboration, they're really straightforward. It wasn't that long ago, 4, 5, 6 years ago, that the vast majority of employees worked at a headquarters site. Now, one of the things that meant was we need to have a meeting. Well, hey, we'll get the conference room. We'll all get in the conference room at 9 o'clock. We'll have a meeting. We'll be done by 10 o'clock, and we go off to our work. Today, when we have people working really all over the country, in many cases you referred to before, all over the world, you really can't do that. And yet the workforce's productivity depends on employees being able to work together with the same degree of efficiency they had when they could just pop into someone's office, a cubicle, or have that kind of a meeting. They have to work together, share knowledge, build consensus, and do all of those things. The fact that they're now distributed is not an excuse. It doesn't take away the requirement to function in that kind of a manner. But it's not just employees working with other employees. If anybody's done any source of outsourcing, that's doing third-party development, that's working with a myriad number of suppliers, distributors, in many cases customers, needs to be able to, on a regular basis, get together and collaborate as efficiently as if they're in the same room looking at a whiteboard or some other tool. Now, speaking of tools, that's a good segue to the next slide where we discuss collaboration tools. Now, Steve, as I think you know, about 15 years ago, I worked for then Digital Equipment Corporation, which is a worldwide corporation. And we certainly used, when I'm thinking about collaboration tools, some of the tools that are listed here in terms of audio conferencing and video conferencing. And the good news is back 10, 15 years ago, the use of video conferencing saved me a number of trips to Europe. Certainly I made regular trips to Europe because you kind of, in many cases, replace that kind of face-to-face, but it certainly was very efficient and saved me a number of trips. If I look at some of the emerging tools on this slide, the first one, telepresence, is really interesting to me. See, from some of the research I've done, roughly 3/4 of companies have already deployed traditional video conferencing. That doesn't surprise me. What surprised me was that roughly 20% of companies have already deployed telepresence. Now, I want to be clear with this. I've talked to companies and work with companies that have deployed video conferencing to hundreds of sites and telepresence to 3, 4, 5 sites. When I've talked to them, I said, you know, why would you go to telepresence? It's a more expensive solution. And they said, Jim, you know how the marketeers say that when you're in a telepresence type of conference, you can read the watch on the person in the other room? I said, yeah, I've heard that. That is true. I said, well, that's nice, but why do I care about that? They said, well, of course you don't care about reading the watch, but it indicates the level of clarity, and you get a better sense of body language, and you communicate so much more in that kind of a collaboration than you do in your standard video conferencing. I have to admit, Steve, I didn't think telepresence would take off to the degree it has. It certainly has. There are a number of other tools here. One I'll speak about, again, somewhat of a whimsical fashion, and that's wikis.
Before you go further, actually, yeah. I wanted to add something there. I think you are raising a great point with the telepresence and also with the video conferencing. Mm-hmm. I think it also enables collaborating within each other, within the business, within the peers, but also without losing the feeling or the touch of,
yep,
you know, face-to-face conversation. But it also actually enables avoidance of the carbon footprint and the travel expenses and all of that, which is also good for the environment.
And that's exactly the case. I mean, the point I had tried to make earlier was that in terms of green IT, enable collaboration to reduce travel, and which, of course, gets into the time, it gets into the carbon footprint. So collaboration, in my mind, does a variety of things. It gets that kind of quick intimacy so that decisions can be made and bought into. You see the body language. You understand, you know, whether you're getting buy-in or not. You understand when there's reservation much more clearly, and it has the benefits of saving money and being, again, from a green perspective, a much better from a carbon footprint. There's absolutely no question of that. And the people that I've been talking to, again, I'm very surprised on the uptake on this. Not very surprised, but surprised. And the people have been quite clear saying, Jim, we're going to continue using video conferencing for certain types of interactions, but for a certain intricate customer service, senior management discussions, et cetera, we're going to use telepresence from, you know, at least three or four of our headquarters sites. And, Steve, there's an interesting little, again, kind of personal thing here in terms of wikis. As you know, I'm a one-person company, so you might say, well, Jim, what kind of collaboration tools do you really need? Well, I belong to a group of guys that play tennis, and I've set up a wiki so that we can schedule our tennis playing. I know it's kind of a cute little example, but it just really talks to how universal these tools are, that they're not just for large corporations anymore. Here's a one-person company using wikis, blogs, et cetera, to accomplish things that, at some level, are pretty important to me.
Now, well, I can certainly agree with that from the small company perspective, because we recently added on a couple of new contractors and are doing some development, and we found just screen sharing, being able to do remote support, et cetera, has just been, again, it's kind of a type of telepresence, but it's really, you know, something that's a collaboration tool that when you have people who are 2 hours away, it's more effective, and in fact is probably even I'm tempted occasionally to use it across the room just so you see the same thing on both screens.
Yeah. No, I think that's a very important point. Again, going back to when I was at Digital Equipment Corporation and we had video conferencing, we were a very big company, a high-tech company. Of course, would have this kind of, you know, state-of-the-art technology. I've seen the collaboration tools here in this this list here not just be at all for the Fortune 50, Global 200, et cetera, to, you know, the point that you and I are sharing here, it's down to the 1, 2, 4, 5 person companies that can still use these tools very effectively today. And that's quite exciting, I think.
Absolutely.
Again, we've kind of lost the tyranny that you had to have a large, big and bad IT shop to have, again, these tools. They're available to virtually anybody these days. But if we move to the next slide, I've kind of referred to it a couple of times in terms of the survey that we gave. And we asked people in the survey, how important are the environmental or green IT benefits, in this case of unified communications? And I just want to walk through this a bit because it's kind of curious. And if you look at that upper right dark blue piece of the pie, 20% said, hey, these considerations are very important. And that's really good. If you come down, though, to the red, I found that answer really fascinating. It says green IT is not important, but any energy power savings are highly important. Now, the way I interpreted that is that person's definition of green IT, or those people, excuse me, we're focused purely on the environmental benefits, etc. And they're saying, hey, we don't really care that much about that, but we do care about the power savings. And that's why I was kind of referencing that when I was talking about my definition of green IT, which is really encompasses both environmental concerns and the energy savings. You know, Steve, if you add those two numbers together, it's 37%, excuse me, 37%. And then if you add that green piece of the pie, it's important but not a driving factor, you come to 78%. That's the vast majority of people that responded to the survey are saying this stuff is important. So I think that, in my mind, that's been a big shift over just the last 2 or 3 years, when 3 years ago green IT was, yeah, it's a nice thing, it's kind of fuzzy, whatever it is, to now the vast majority of people are saying it's either important or very important to them. That, to me, is a very, very significant finding. Now, if I think about green IT from kind of the negative perspective on the next slide, by negative I mean what happens to organizations or what's the result of not implementing green IT? Well, clearly from an environmental perspective, we'll continue to do unnecessary harm to the environment, incur higher operating costs. Now, whether Steve asked the electricity costs that we kind of referred to in that previous slide, or the almost $500 I spent to fly to Atlanta for a one-hour meeting, it's a whole variety of operating costs. As we get to a point where having a high carbon footprint is socially unacceptable, I really believe this will tarnish the reputation of the company. We've really turned around how we look at things these days. Just the fact that phrase, carbon footprint, is so common, I think really reinforces that. As a result, will cause the company, I believe, to lose revenue. So, Steve, I think that the movement to green IT is real. It's here. It's tightly linked to collaboration, and it has a very significant impact on networking.
Okay, great. Thanks so much, Jim. I certainly agree with you on those comments, and I think that particularly we're going to see in the U.S. with the current energy crunch more attention because a lot of the world has had high energy costs, et cetera, whether it has to do with travel, ultimately the cost of power, et cetera. And so I think it's going to absolutely continue to be a key issue. At this point, what I'd like to do is to introduce Berna Devrim from Cisco. Cisco is the sponsor of this webcast, and Berna is going to be giving us some ideas so far as what Cisco's doing in this particular area. So, Berna?
Thank you very much, first of all, for inviting me to be a part of your show. And to share with you how Cisco solutions enable green business practices. So you've been mentioning similar facts in your survey. As you know, corporations around the globe are increasingly making behavioral changes to protect the environment and take environmental responsibility seriously. Of course, business and IT managers are facing increasing pressure to improve the green stance of their organizations. Now, rising energy costs, environmental concerns, government industry directives, and heightened public scrutiny are all combining to bring green issues and practices to the forefront of business and IT plans. As the leader in the networking industry, Cisco has committed to initiatives to address a wide range of green issues, and we aim to be environmentally responsible through addressing all aspects of our business as well as providing solutions that enable green practices to our customers. But when we are to take a look at what we are doing, we are looking at our operations by impacting how we operate as a business, through our products, by creating efficiencies and innovations, through architecture, by providing solutions to our customers to address global environmental issues, and through all of us, through our employees, by inspiring them to get involved and take more action. Now, these rising green pressures are also driving more and more discussions focused on how the network, a resource that touches everything, can bolster green efforts. And at the center of these discussions are the routing and switching systems that form the central core of the network infrastructure. These central network systems can have a profound impact on an organization's green practices and standing. Gains in business and IT efficiency serve to control energy costs and consumption while also reducing e-waste. Gains in business and IT effectiveness serve to improve worker productivity, remote collaboration, and business profitability.
Okay, great. Could you give us a little bit of some examples of maybe how some of the things Cisco is doing will actually help your customers enable green practices, and drilling down just a little bit?
Oh, sure. Cisco takes a holistic solutions approach to how we enable green practices. But to start with, let's take a look at the power efficiency. Cisco offers optimized power supplies for all catalyst switches. About 90% or so efficiency was observed for catalyst power supplies when load is about 50%, for example. Also, generations over generations, power consumptions of Cisco modular switches decrease dramatically. For example, for catalyst 4500 SUP 2 Plus versus SUP 6E, there is up to 70% less power consumed on a per gigabit per second basis. Also, green certification by Myercom for the catalyst fixed switching product portfolio and recent Network World's Clear Choice Award to the Catalyst 3750E series are also independent proof points of our product's excellent power efficiency. Intelligent power management and delivery features are also very important contributors to the power efficiency. With the capability to negotiate power using what we call CDP, which is Cisco Discovery Protocol, and LLDP, Catalyst switches are capable of right-sizing the power supplies, hence maximizing the number of PoE devices supported per switch. A time-based power or Ethernet management feature, which we are calling Embedded Event Manager, also helps decrease power consumption using scripts based on policies. Now, while all the efficiency gains can be substantial with Cisco network systems, they can pale in comparison to the green gains made possible through improved network effectiveness. High performance, secure networking enables the telecommuter to be fully productive away from the office. I think this would go very well with you, Jim and Stephen, as you've been mentioning that you're actually more, you know, doing things as a one-person business, and hopefully you can actually use these solutions yourself as well, as you've been mentioning. Now, high-quality IP telephony and telepresence sessions supported by a solid service-rich network infrastructure provide for the best possible user experience and remote collaboration returns. These green business practices not only reduce the environmental impact, operating costs, and productivity loss relating to travel, but also improve worker satisfaction, knowledge exchange, and business processes. Now, next, if we look at the green operations, enabling optimized resources and increased productivities, we see that we provide several solutions there as well. Integrated services, such as switch integrated security, wireless control, and application intelligence all enable less equipment, thus resulting in green operations. Collaboration applications such as telepresence are also crucial to green IT practices as they facilitate business collaborations without losing in-person feeling while reducing business travels and fuel consumptions.
Right. You know, fuel consumption, waste, et cetera, kind of brings me back to a term that you used earlier on that was e-waste. Can you tell me a little bit or tell us a little bit about what you mean when you're talking about e-waste?
Oh, absolutely. Great question. E-waste avoidance is enabled by extending the service life of networking equipment so it is not thrown away when business demands change and the network needs to evolve and support these requirements by things such as rapid additional applications deployments or turning on new features. Longer product and service life cycles result in many, many green benefits. Cisco Catalyst switches provide headroom for growth with many innovative features. Hardware-based service acceleration to support a newer class of applications without comprehensive upgrades, or other innovative features such as Catalyst 6500 Virtual Switching System 1440, which takes network system virtualization to the next level, or Twin-Gig Converter Module that facilitates gigabit Ethernet to 10 gigabit Ethernet upgrades, and literally in 10 seconds, all of which enable cost savings and e-waste reduction. Now, of course, last but not least, we have a continued set of innovations moving forward as well. Now, our customers' requirements drive our features and product innovations. We continuously innovate. For example, turning on capabilities with iOS service enhancements or new developments in application-specific integrated circuit, or known as ASIC, technology for Cisco Catalyst fixed switching may reduce power consumption by as much as 25% while providing more services, and of course there's much more to come moving forward. As a result of all of these things that I've just discussed, benefits such as cutting energy costs, meeting regulatory requirements, improving IT efficiency, reducing carbon footprint, and minimizing e-waste are achieved. Bottom line, green practices are not only good for the environment, but they're also good for the business. So if we take a look at, you know, around 1.25 billion people are connecting to the internet using computers, cell phones, PDAs, television cables, or other electronic devices, which are creating more than 1 billion connections. And if you look at over the next 5 years, that we see that the estimates suggest that the number of users will double, while the number of connections will increase fivefold to more than 5 billion connections. You know, if you can work towards making every network connection a greener connection, definitely our world hopefully will be a better place to live. And that's our approach from a Cisco perspective.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much. Jim, any comments, Baranat, that we've, so far as wrapping up?
Well, actually, Steve, I don't want to focus on the technology because I think Baranat did a very good job of that. But I was impressed the last time I was out at Cisco, and I was working with a gentleman, and he went to the printer room, and a very clear sign saying, you know, think before you print, do you really need to print this? And what I've seen with Cisco, forgetting about their product for a second, although that's critical, is a change in the culture, and I think that reflects changes you're seeing across the country and around the world to where there is more of a focus. Again, I said before, you hear the phrase carbon footprint much more than you ever did. You're seeing signs like think before you print more than you did. So I really do see an awful lot of momentum, and I think it's highly justified behind the movement to green IT.
Okay, great. And by the way, so far as being green, I feel compelled to point out that unlike the old days when I've actually also flown across the country to do a webcast such as this, we've recorded this entire webcast with Berna in California, you in Florida, and myself in North Carolina.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
So we're moving. Berna?
Yes, thank you very much for this opportunity. I think you have raised several great, comments and facts, and we do truly appreciate your including us, our perspective in this picture as well.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, and thanks to all of our listeners for listening to the webcast.